Folgers out there. Someplace along there.
He just had puppies. Well, he didn't have puppies, but he's the father of puppies.
Oh.
God knows he tried long enough.
Who's the mother of the puppies?
Mothers. Mentally retarded, I hate to say that. I don't know. She
just runs around town.
The dumbest animal I ever seen in my life.
All right, we'll get started. So could you introduce yourself and tell me your name, when you were born, where you were born?
Well, my name is John D. Morse. I was born in Sutton General Hospital, September 3rd, 1946. That's in Braxton County. And I've lived my whole life, with the exception of the time I was away from here in college, from 64 to 69, I've lived on this property here my family owned on Otter Creek, about a mile up Otter Creek from Ivydale, West Virginia. And originally lived on property that my parents, Dallas and Anna Morse, owned, and after they passed away, and I now own all of their property, and I bought the heirs out of my father's property that had belonged to his family. I own property that he was raised on now. It belonged to my grandfather. It all joined together, and now I own all the Morse property that the Morse family come to this property in 1917 from the south end of Calhoun County at Stinson. And they bought a little farm up here next door and added some property to it. Then my dad bought property next to it. And now it's all joined together, about 200 acres. And so that's where I'm at.
Why don't you tell me about your parents?
Well, my parents came from just working class farmers, people. My grandfather Morse farmed. My grandmother Morse was at Adams, and her dad and mother, they farmed, and I think he had a sawmill, Bill Adams. I think he had a sawmill and a grocery store at one time. They were from around, Adams was around Stinson and then Ivydale. And the Morses, Grandpa Morse, with Amos Morse, from Stinson over in Calhoun County. His father died pretty early in his life. He died well before the turn of the century, and he was Isaac Morse. And my great-grandmother was Indiana Murphy Morse, and they basically farmed or worked at his brothers were farmers, or they would work whatever jobs was available, maybe oil field work or something like that, when it came around to that. But they had some grade school education. It's about as far as they went in school. The Adamses, the one they called old great-granddaddy, was a doctor. He was an educated doctor. And he had a pretty good home over below Stinson in Calhoun County, and it's still standing, and people still live in it. And it was a pretty nice house, you know. And he had an office out separate out back. My dad used to talk about that. He had a skeleton out there in that office, and my dad said he was scared to death of that skeleton hanging in there in the back of his office. But he was educated, and he seemed to be, from all indications, quite a smart doctor. My dad said he seen him cut a dangling growth off the back of a woman's leg one time. They thought it was a cancer, and said he went out and got some stuff out of the woods, got some herbs, and dug up some stuff, and pounded it up. He made some kind of poultice of a thing, and he cut that growth off of that woman's leg, and put that poultice on it, and told her to come back in a month or something like that. And she come back, and they, all sign of it was gone. Wow. And that was a oft-repeated family story. But Doc Adams was, you know, a pretty good doctor. And not very long ago, somebody published a picture of him in a computer. They had some kind of a little newspaper in a computer over in Calhoun County called the Calhoun Her, or something like that. Mm-hmm. It had Doc Adams' picture in there. And it was a stage picture. It had a woman dressed like a nurse with the cap on, and Doc Adams was treating her. Of course, the hospital bed was sitting outside by a fence. it was not hard to tell it was staged.
Right.
But the odd thing about it was that Doc Adams and I looked exactly alike.
Wow.
Exactly. I mean, it was just laughable. I used to chew tobacco even down to he had chewed tobacco, you know. And we were just 95% alike.
Wow.
I knew where I got my looks. I knew where I got my. You tell by looking at the picture, looked like he was red-haired. Mm-hmm. You know, looked like he had red hair in the picture even.
Was your family musical?
Yeah. My on the other side of my family, on my mother's side of the family, I never got around to them. My grandpa Morse played the banjo some, and old time, and my grandmother Morse played the banjo. And the one thing I could remember her playing, and she would tune the banjo up entirely different than Grandpa tuned the banjo. It would take her a long time to get it in tune, but she would play Cherry River Line when she got it in tune. I can remember that. And she died in, I believe, 1959. She had lung cancer. And that's about all I can remember about her banjo playing. And she had a sister lived right down the road here, Irma Salisbury. Oscar Salisbury's wife was her sister. And I was a frequent visitor in their home. And Aunt Irma could play piano. She had a piano, and she could play piano some. So the Adamses were musical. And Uncle Oscar played the banjo, and he had a banjo and a fiddle, both. And I think Aunt Irma said she saved turkey eggs and sold them at the store and bought him a fiddle out of the Montgomery Ward catalog. That's where she got a fiddle, I think it was maybe $7 or something like that. It's a pretty good fiddle. I played it several times. But on my mother's side, my grandmother was what would be known as an old time Christian or a Shouting Baptist. And she would go to church, and she would oftentimes have a spiritual outbreak, you know, in church, and shout and sing the praises of the Lord. And she would often as not sing the song "Jesus Is a Rock in a Weary Land," the song that David and I sung down through the years, and I still continue to sing it. I sung it at Frank and Jane George's funeral the last time I sung it any place. But that was one of her songs. And I stayed here in this house with her maybe 2 years before I started to school. Grade school, when I was just a little fellow, 5 or 6 years old, approaching time to go to school. My mother and dad worked long years and years getting teacher's degrees. They were school teachers. But I'll get around to that in a little bit. But as far as music goes, Grandma sung, she'd sung all the old standard song ballads. You know, she could sing Barbara Allen and those songs like that. My mother could sing them all day long. She knew everything. She had learned all those songs from Grandma at some point and learned them down through the years. And Grandma, I can remember Grandma singing "The Orphan Girl." That was just that song. I don't know, that song just pierced me some way or another. It was just so sad, you know. And I always just thought, you know, I always just felt for that person, you know. But I remember that was the living room on that side, you know, and I heard her sing that so many times in this house. And she would listen to the radio, WAY radio, Oak Hill. And there was... we'd hear... Freddie Steele was a radio preacher and a singer, and I always liked to hear him sing. And he used to sing old Carter family song, "Gospel Ship." I'm going to take a trip in the old gospel ship. And he'd sing that. I think that might have been his theme song. He'd come on, you know, singing that. And I heard all that kind of music when I was just 5 years old, and it stayed with me all my life. Mm-hmm. We had a wind-up Victrola that set up at the top of the stairs, and there was a a couple of Bill Monroe records, and it was a Gid Tanner, the Skillet Lickers, and there's two or three old records like that come. There's Bill Monroe and Charlie Monroe singing, "This World's Not My Home, I'm Just Passing Through." Mm-hmm. And I just big enough to wind it up and turn it on, you know. And all that stuff got ingrained in me from hearing it over and over, and that stuff has stayed with me all my life. And this house here has always been more of a home to me than the house I actually raised in down there. We went through a flood here in 53 and almost destroyed that house down there. And we had to move in this house with my grandmother. And I can remember, I didn't want to go back down there. I didn't want to go there and live anymore. I didn't like that house anymore. You know, and it was all new. They fixed it. It was all new and everything. But I still wanted to stay here. This was still my home, and I'm still that way. I went for 30 years and didn't stay a night in that house down there after I left there. But then my mother wanted me to help take care of her, and I went back down there and from 2000 to 2005 I took care of my mother, and 2 years I stayed down there and never even come back up here. I'd done some work on the inside of this house at that time, but Mom got a guitar when she's I don't know, about maybe 12 years old or something like that. And a fellow named Jim Frame lived on the Mountain Home Ridge out here, and a fellow named Jim Frame taught her to play guitar some, and she could play in the Carter style. She finger picked the Carter stuff. She played a Wildwood Flyer. She could play any number of songs, and she would used to sing Roving Gambler and Single Girl and those songs like that. Mm-hmm. She sang a lot of those songs. She liked Jimmy Rogers stuff. She'd sing that railroad stuff, and I don't know, I can't recall a lot of stuff to mind, but I can remember her singing. She'd sing while she was working, you know, singing Mother, you know. Mm-hmm. She'd be going through the house working to sing Barbara Allen or something like that, you know, and it'd last, she'd be working in the house. But she was a great homemaker and worked outside the home at the same time. But she could sit down and make you a shirt and sing 20-minute long song, make you a shirt on a sewing machine while she was doing it. You know, I mean, she was that kind of somebody. But Dad played guitar and played banjo some. He liked Jimmy Rogers stuff. He went all the way to Meridian, Mississippi, to Jimmy Rogers festivals after he was retired. He wore out two motor homes, and I don't know how many campers they wore out, beat the highways to death. He's retired 22 years before he had to give it up, you know.
Didn't you say your mom would go like 80 miles an hour in the campers?
Yeah, if it'd go 80, she'd be, she'd come back. She was smart, My mother was a really smart woman. Neighbor woman up here was a little bit older than her. And she said she was born on Groves Creek. She wasn't born up here. She was born on Groves Creek, and they stayed out there to on Groves Creek probably until she was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old or something. I don't know how old she was when they moved to the ridge out here. But Groves Creek is over between Harrison Widen Ridge and the river, Elk River. And she said she could remember my mother running off and coming to the Groves Creek school when she was 4 years old. She said she was so little, older kids take care of her at school. And they just let her come to school. And she'd run off, she's 4 years old. I don't know, school was a mile down there or something. She'd run off down through the country and come to school. She wanted to learn that bad. And she graduated. They skipped her, let her skip 2 or 3 grades in school. And she went up to Glenville. I don't know what she got. I don't know if she got a standard normal. One of her college degrees is down in the attic down at the house. I think it's a standard normal. Mm-hmm. Which I think it's it took 2 years to get it, I think.
Okay.
But she got out of college and come back home, and she was ready to start teaching, and she was only 17 years old. And her daddy and somebody down at the courthouse fixed her up a birth certificate showing that she was 18 years old so she could start teaching the fall term. And she said later she told me before she, not too long before she died, she didn't know how old she was exactly or when she's born. She had a birth certificate that said 11/13/12 on it. Uh-huh. November 13th, 1912 on it. She didn't know if that was right or not. Uh-huh. They fixed her a birth certificate so she could go to teaching school. And I think that she'd only liked about 3 months being old enough, being 18. But nowadays that'd be all kinds of federal crimes or nothing. But this is West Virginia, and in West Virginia you do whatever you have to do to get by. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a get by state. People have done that eternally, and they continue to do it. You do whatever you have to do to get by in this place. And you'll see that over and over in time. And so she went to teaching school when she was actually 17 years old, and she had a college degree. And my dad went through, I guess, 8th grade, and I don't know, even know where he went. I don't know whether he went to grade school, Ivydale, down to Ottertown. Down here they had a school down here called Ottertown, and it was right by the mouth of Otter Creek down at Ivydale. I don't know, it was one up in Otter Lick up a holler up here. I don't know where he went to school actually, but he got an 8th grade education. Dad was born in 1913, and he was out of school, and I guess working around whatever he could work at. He worked on road jobs, and worked that he helped build roads, paved roads and stuff like that. And I don't know if he was working at that or what he was doing, but in 1932, he said his mother talked him into going back to school, told him, said, you're smart, and you need to go to school, get some place in life. She was Adams, you know, and there was doctors in the family, and the smart run in the family. And she was, if she could get her hands when the newspapers become available, she took the newspaper every day. She read the political pages every day. She listened to the radio. When they got a radio, she listened to every political show. They got a television. She watched every political, the Sunday show. She watched every one of them. There was a picture of Franklin Roosevelt on the wall in their home. I've still got the picture. My aunt, dad's sister that lived on up on the next farm up the road up there, they had a picture of Roosevelt in the, they both had huge scrapbooks, political scrapbooks. They had scrapbooks that went clear through the Second World War. My brother carried them off, and I never seen them again. But she lived and breathed politics, and the world scene, and the national scene. She was right up to date on everything. And she talked my dad into going back to school in 1932. At 36, he graduated from high school. And he and Mom got married in 34. And see, he was married 2 years before he got out of high school. They were married, and they lived in the house over here next door. It's been torn down now. It finally got too bad, and they're tearing it down. But they were smart, and they both figured out to Grandpa Hill never played music. He didn't play music. He was a dancer. Grandpa Hill was a dancer. He loved to dance. He was a timber man. He carried a fiddle with him. He worked in log camps and stuff. He carried a fiddle with him. And anytime he encountered somebody who could play the fiddle, he'd have them play the fiddle so he could dance. That's how well he loved to dance. He carried a fiddle. He carried a fiddle so he could dance. You ever hear a story like that? I'll show you his hat after a while.
Okay.
I've got his boater. He wore a boater. I've got it upstairs. Up to you.
He sounds fun.
Huh?
He sounds really fun.
He must have been.
Yeah.
I can only remember him in the weeks, the months. He had a bad heart. He died in 48. He died when I was just a little fella. But they brought him off the farm, brought him down to our house, and he stayed there for the last few months of his life. And I can't, strangely enough, I wouldn't have been but 2 years old or something. And I can remember him being propped up in that bed in that house, and I can remember that he kept candy bars Mom had one of them things that you hang over a door and keep shoes in, and he kept candy bars in that. They were in a red candy bars, and I now later figured out they were Clark bars. He kept Clark bars in that shoe hanger on that door, huh?
Would he give them to you?
Well, I guess he did, because I remember the red candy bars in there. And I remember that he was kind of a big guy, and he stayed in that bed in that room there. but he liked to dance. And Mom said he could waltz, and he could ballroom dance. He could do any kind of dances. Wow. He loved to dance. And somebody stole his fiddle in a log camp. Oh, yeah. He had a fiddle. Said somebody stole it in a log camp. But he was somewhat older than my grandmother. She got married when she was 15 or 16, something like that, 19 and 10, I believe. And he was maybe 10 or 12 years older than her or something. And he met her. She lived on Wilson Ridge, which is between Groves Creek and Wyden. And it's about a 5-mile stretch of road out there or something up on the ridge. Well, Groves Creek is down in there. There was a log job. He had a team of horses and he came to Groves Creek and was logging, and that's where he met Grandma, and he married her. And Mom said she asked him 2 or 3 times, you know, said, "What were you doing on Groves Creek?" Because he was from Kanawha County. He was from Barron Creek, Corton. Do you know where the Courtney used to be? Max Samples was raised.
Oh, no.
There was a big Cobb station across the river. Big gas plant across the river down there. Mm-hmm. It's right above, about 2 miles above Queen Shoals. And he was raised up a holler there. And hills were, you know, several of them there. A whole holler full of them, I reckon. That's where they're buried and everything down there. And Mom said she asked him 2 or 3 times, said, what were you doing way up here? You know, what are you doing coming up here logging? What was you doing up here on Groves Creek? He said, "I come to get your mother." And that's all the answer he ever gets. Wow. Said, "I come to get your mother." Said, it was a little coy answer,
yeah,
a little coy grin, you know. What are you doing? What was you doing up here? I come to get your mother.
I want to jump ahead to get back to you. Could you tell me how you started to play music?
Grandpa and Dad, they always had these banjos. And I started trying to play the banjo first when I was probably 6 or 7 years old. I started trying to play the banjo. Where's that banjo at? Right there. Yeah. Paul, get that thing out of there. I'll show you how I got started. Henry wanted to learn how to make banjos. Henry Barnes, that box of stuff there come today. I just got it off the porch wall. So that's Henry's, rest of Henry's banjo kit too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. This banjo started out life as an empty space. It's one of them things that never was. I just kept accumulating pieces. Grandpa he always played in this C tuning. Which you get a whole chord with one note. That looked easy. That's easy enough to do. And that's how I started playing the banjo. I started playing like my grandpa played. That's the first thing I played. My daddy always, he played in G tunings. He played Cripple Creek or other stuff, you know. But grandpa always played the... That's how I started playing. I started playing like Grandpa played. And if somebody else had the banjo and they had it tuned some other way, I watched to see where the keys went when Grandpa tuned the banjo. Mm-hmm. And I'd get it, and I'd turn the keys back around on the way Grandpa had it tuned. I'd turn the keys back around to where he had it. And that's how I learned to tune it. Mm-hmm. I'd put the keys in around where Grandpa put the keys, and I'd get it in tune.
So it was about the position of the keys.
It was about the position of the keys. But I figured that out, you know, somewhat later. I probably wasn't 6 years old when I was doing that. But I started trying to play the banjo really early. And I probably didn't have it any more in tune than this one was either. Something like that, and then I remember him. Only thing I ever heard him sing, it was anything of a song. I got pig home in a pen, corn feed it on. All I want's a pretty little girl, feed it when I'm gone. That's the only thing I ever heard him sing that I can remember.
Just that.
That's a sort of a floating verse.
Yeah.
It's in Shady Grove and Fire at Blue Eyed Gal. Shady Grove, you know, it's sort of a flea. I don't learn to talk. I got my teeth pulled, biggest mistake ever made in my life.
Uh-oh.
I'd have kept them until I didn't have them.
And then, how old were you when you met French Carpenter and he taught you those chords to Birdie?
About 10.
And was that the first time you played fiddle?
Yeah, that's the first time I ever got my hands on a fiddle. Mom took me to B&B Loans in Charleston and bought a fiddle. I think it's upstairs in the closet up there. Gave $12 for it. Come to B&B Loans in Charleston.
How'd you meet French Carpenter?
French Carpenter?
Yeah.
French Carpenter lived in the Big Otter neighborhood, Hallberg. Lived here, I can remember French Carpenter as long as I can remember anybody. He'd come to school, play at school pie socials, and there wasn't no trouble meeting French Carpenter.
He was just around.
Daddy'd pick him up along the road if he's hitchhiking, you know. It wasn't no trouble meeting French Carpenter.
But, like, he showed you how to play, like, chords on the fiddle, which is really different than how a lot of people learn.
Yeah, he played Birdie, and he showed me them three chords that he played. And he played how to play Birdie with them three chords that he played it with. And ever after that, fiddle chords were structured around chords.
Yeah.
My God said it was played in chords.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to learn.
Yeah, it's correct.
Don't.
It's correct way to learn.
When he tried to teach me to play Birdie, I thought it was like the simplest tune, and then I was like, almost had an aneurysm trying to wrap my head around it. I was like, what do you mean? It's chords. But I got it.
Yeah. Once you get the chord, you figure out. If you figure out where the chords are, what chords are on a fiddle, then you can go a long way real quick.
Right. Yeah, that was a really big turning point for me in learning to play.
Yeah.
Why don't we have you introduce yourself and say where you're from and when you were born and talk a little bit about learning to play.
Yeah, I'm Jen Isco. I was born on October 6, 1991 in Silver Spring, Maryland. I grew up on a farm in Montgomery County, Maryland that was sold when I was about 10 or 11. And since then I've moved around a lot. I moved to West Virginia in 2009 to go to WVU and graduated in 2014. And since then, I lived in Hillsboro, down in Pocahontas County, and then moved up to Elkins, where I started working at Augusta Heritage Center as the marketing coordinator or assistant. It changed a few times. Working there and started to get kind of into the old-time music world, going to some of the festivals and stuff, and just meeting a lot of the fiddlers around Randolph County. About a year into living there, I moved to Whitesburg, Kentucky, and worked as an AmeriCorps Vista Apple Shop. And then that was kind of when I started to really get interested in playing the fiddle and started learning from John Harrod and a couple of the fiddlers down there. A lot of East Kentucky tunes, but after a year of living there, I wanted to move back to West Virginia, so moved back to Elkins, worked at Augusta again, and then really started taking playing seriously and learning pretty full on. And then that's when I met John. I came to visit him and it was really, really fun. And he taught me walking in the parlor, sort of like a stripped down version when I came to visit, and started learning sort of some of the stories around Clay County. And I was particularly interested in John Johnson and French Carpenter and also some of the like folklore surrounding this area, and John is like the keeper of the stories. And it was fascinating for me. So when this opportunity came to be his apprentice, I basically just wrote him a letter and was like, I don't know if you remember me, but I remember you, and I really, really want to come hang out with you. And here we are.
We've had a a great time going through these stories in particular. I mean, the tunes are easy. That's the easy part, you know. But
not for me.
Well, sorting out the stories and trying to impart some idea of the people involved in these stories, the Booger Hole stories, and there's one story that we pursued quite at length, the story of Orb Duffield, who done 50 years in the penitentiary for the murder of his girlfriend's husband, which she allegedly confessed to the night she died. She finally confessed that she killed him. And he went to the penitentiary in her place for 50 years. And we have an interview pending with the person who was allegedly there the night she confessed. That's one of the more interesting stories. And the story behind the Ballad of Jay Legg. Another one.
Lacey Ann Boggs.
Killing of Lacey Ann Boggs was allegedly killed because in the Booger Hole history, she said she could, that there was a peddler came up missing in Booger Hole, and she allegedly said she could light her pipe and go to the drummer's bones before it went out. And just a short time later, somebody slipped up and shot her through the open window in her house, shot her in the head and killed her. I know more about that than I'm willing to tell right
now. So what?
Booger Hole is the name of a holler that starts at the right hand fork of Rush Creek, Rush Fork Creek. And in 1910, 20 or something like that, in that year, some of the meanest people that you can imagine lived in there. People come up missing. There was feuds, murders, moonshining. Curry book, did she go into it about when they burned it out?
Yeah.
She got a book. There's a Douglas girl, Wilson Douglas.
Oh, cool. Yeah, she wrote Mary Curry.
Wilson Douglas was raised up in there.
Okay.
She's got a book there that might explain what you want to know a little better.
There's lots of stories in here. There's Ghost Tales as Told by Wilson Douglas. But yeah, I found this book online, and it was printed in 1990, and it's not printed anymore. So I wrote her a letter, and she sent it back and said, "Consider this a gift. Write a song about it."
Awesome. What's in
they? A bunch of people they called the regulators. There's a song I wrote about nearly 20 years ago. Never did get it out and transcribe it. We'll have to do that sometime. Mm-hmm. What's that ribbon there?
Old Time. It's from cool. Vandalia.
Oh.
You want it?
No, put it back in there. I just didn't know what it was. Was that for banjo or mm-hmm. something? Did I play in the banjo contest?
Looks like you did, and you got third place.
So what do you... Oh, go ahead.
A bunch of people got together called the regulators. Sort of like, not like Ku Klux Klan exactly, they just...
A mob.
Mob. And they burned about 20 houses or something in there one night. And the Sampsons was involved in that. The Sampson Tanner was into a feud in there.
Is that like Harvey Sampson?
Harvey Sampson's dad and the brothers and stuff. And they put up a sign that says, "Don't stop till you cross the Ohio River," I believe is what it said. Is it in there?
It is somewhere, yeah.
I believe that's what it said, wasn't it? "Don't stop till you cross the Ohio River, don't come back."
Says, "We the citizens of Clay County, seeing that we cannot get justice by law, have organized the Clay County mob. We have pledged our lives to driving you people from our country or kill you. If we cannot catch you and hang you, we will sneak up upon you and kill you as you killed Henry Hargis, Lacey Ann Boggs, the old peddler, and Preston Tanner. If before you leave there's any stealing, killing, or burning, we will get the bloodhounds and detectives and run you to the ends of the earth. Signed, the Clay County mob. P.S. Don't stop this side of the Ohio River."
Wow.
That.
Yeah, they did not want them there anymore.
Yeah. Lacey Ann Boggs claimed Henry Hargis was an old peddler. She claimed she could light her pipe and go to the drummer's bones or the peddler's bones before it went out. And that's what she got killed over.
What's the drummer's bone? What does that mean?
Well, drummer was another name for a peddler.
Okay.
Drummer's bones was Henry Hargis's remains.
Uh-huh.
Somebody else told me that their kids was in school, Clay, back in the 80s. They looked at Henry Hargis up, and they said that Henry Hargis had a jewelry store or something on Capitol Street for years and years after that, and he wasn't killed at all in there. Now,
it's possible.
I'll tell you who it was. It was a woman's name was Kathy Vance, and James Vance was James and Kathy Vance. He was a DNR officer at Clay, and his kids was in school down there. Jamie and had two, I think, twin girls.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's a girl. And they done some research on it, and they said that Henry Hargis had a jewelry store or something
mm-hmm.
on Capitol Street.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't killed at all up there, and I never did. I don't know how to check that out, but somebody might check Henry Hargis out.
Mm-hmm.
might be worth checking out.
I think that'll be me.
So do you do other interviews as part of this apprenticeship?
We visited, what was her name that we went to visit?
Sybil Carr. Yeah.
And she was related to...
She's a granddaughter of Bragg. What was it?
Whirly Bragg.
Who? What's his name? You got it.
Whirly Bragg?
Early.
Early Bragg.
Early Bragg, yeah. We've been looking at Early Bragg. Early Bragg.
About that shootout.
Yeah. I have a 38 pistol. Well, I have a lot of them, but got one right there, as a matter of fact. But I've got a 38 pistol down in a bank vault down in Clay. That we've had it. My mom taught a term of school, and I guess right before she maybe she took some time out during the war and went with Dad. I don't know for sure exactly how that worked out. My dad, he went to school up at Glenville. He graduated from high school in 1936. And I don't know. I know he went to school up there, and a year or two after that. But I don't know exactly what years. Mm-hmm. But trying to sort out.
You can come back to it if you want.
She probably was it. Let's see, Lowell Farrell was born in 1942. This is sometime. This is sometime in probably. In the school year 1942. Some kid gave her an old 38 pistol. And it had no, it was in the outbuilding down the house down there out in the outbuilding. Me and David played with it the whole time we was growing up. It was our toy pistol. Had a cylinder in it, but it didn't have no works in it. Mm-hmm. And they always said that it belonged to the person that Early Bragg killed. And well, Early Bragg lived in the head of the holler up there, and he had pretty good sized family, and they were the girls were school teachers, and the boys. One of them, Woodrow, was a constable in, and I don't know, he was in board of directors of the bank, and. You know, he was a big cheese around, you know, and in the 30s and 40s, and I don't know when he died, 50. He died 52 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was up in the 50s or something he died. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we got to, I talked to his granddaughter, Sybil's his granddaughter. She said, what did she say? She was 82 years old or something. But she's really spry.
And she played a lot of music, and she still plays a little bit.
Yeah, she has had a lifelong interest in music, you know, played with Wilson Douglas a lot, you know, not out in public, but mm-hmm. around here. She played with him around here in public, but she had a dobro and an auto harp and guitar and stuff.
Piano.
And piano. I'd ask her, I asked her about that one day down at Clay. I told her, I said, I've got a pistol that's supposed to belong to a man that Early Bragg killed. I said, what's the story on that? He said, well,
saved by the bell.
I gotta stop these. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello.